Hello, welcome to the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the caramel kid?
What? I'm good. What's Sean saying?
He's doing all right. There was biblical rain in Amsterdam today. It was raining hard.
Biblical. Yeah. That's quality. I like.
There was nearly a plague of toads or whatever there was. I don't read the Bible much, but yeah. A plague of locusts and toads are falling out of the sky. It was mental. It was really heavy, but I fortunately saved my run until it was a bit drier, and I've been out and I've got that banked. How's your running going? Are you getting much done?
I was, but then I'm slacking off. And then I was texting my friend, a Norwegian runner, and he's going, from training so hard, he's enjoying eating so much food now. You know, the food that you could never have.
Yeah.
So he's got a little pot belly. But I said the problem. It looks like we're pregnant.
You put my wife to shame.
But he goes, it's all right, we can train it off. I was like, all right, yeah, we can train it off.
Yeah. When you start training.
You know what you do need, though, if it rains? You need one of those umbrella hats.
Really?
You know those hats? Yeah, then you'll be fine, then you won't get wet.
Yeah. Someone needs to adapt those for runners, I think. Get out there and make them. We need them on the market. Yeah,
you look like a miner when you're wearing a head torch, but so you might as well just get a little umbrella hat.
Yeah,
and he looked like, obviously a lot of joggers run with the water, you know, the water pouch.
Oh, like the camel packs and all that.
Yeah. You know, like the Americans have those helmets with the drinks on them.
Oh yeah, with the straw.
Yeah. You might as well just get those. You know, run with those. Yeah. Free up your hands. You know.
So if you see a pot-bellied man wearing an American with two cans in it, drinking out of it, running through London, you know it's Jermaine. Look out for him. You need a challenge, Jermaine. You need a challenge, which is why we should challenge you to run an ultra. What do you reckon?
Oh boy. I think the longest Sunday run I've ever done is an hour and a half.
No, that's surely. Even when you come fourth at the inner counties, cross country, you're only doing an hour and a half run.
I only did an hour then.
You're joking. Jesus.
Yeah. Boy.
Wow.
After an hour and 10 minutes, my legs start falling apart, boy.
Which is why this week's interviewee couldn't be any different to you. He's Damien Hall, and he's just finished in Chamonix doing the UTMB. I think he was going for 22 hours. Can you imagine that, 22 hours running?
But he stops though.
He has little walk breaks and stuff, yeah. But he's still moving around for 22 hours. That's incredible. Jesus.
Well, being on your legs for extended amount of time is tough. Because when people say to me, "Oh, I'm thinking about doing a marathon," I'm thinking, "Have you ever walked for 5 hours?" Or because I was thinking, "How long is it going to take you?" People just ain't got that concept of being on their legs for that long.
No.
And they expect to run it. Yeah. So yeah, the ultra, that's no joke.
Yeah, jeez. I've never done an ultra. I've obviously done a marathon, but I don't think I've gone over marathon distance. Yeah, I don't think I have.
Well, what about in training? Not even in training?
I think I might have once, but not too much over. But I thought about doing some ultra, and I actually do train an ultra international over here in the Netherlands, Jana. And I coach her, mainly because I don't think the principles are that different. And if you can coach someone for anything, you can plan, you can coach pretty much anyone. I know to be very competitive, you probably need a little bit of nous and a bit of knowledge. But I think I've looked into it a lot, and I've looked into how she runs and what works for her. And she was on the world, she ran at the world IEAU Trail Championships, did very well. I think she's run the fastest time by a Dutch lady, the Trans Gran Canaria race. So, you know, she can compete, and I just think it's about being specific in training, isn't it? Like, and not doing way too much.
So what do you do? Do you marathon training and then win?
Pretty much, but then with looking at, so if she's doing like a really hilly race, she's got to make sure she gets out, and she lived in England, but she's got to make sure she's out in the peaks and running long runs there. And I always thought that doing too many of these mental long runs, like going out for 7-8 hours running, I think that tires you out too much. So we used to just do back-to-back days. So she'd do a reasonably hard 2-3 hours one day, and then she'd do a slightly easier 2-3 hours the next day. So she's getting 4 or 5 hours over the course of a weekend, but she's not doing at least mammoth long runs.
Or if you did it one in the night time and one in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
You still have sleep. You still have, obviously, it's still within 24-hour cycle, maybe.
Yeah, you're still glycogen depleted. You're still probably, you know, you're running on tired legs. Your muscles are still tired. So you're getting the same training benefit. I did read somewhere there was research that suggested that runs of over 3 hours, training runs of over 3 hours, bring less. That's the kind of the sweet point where the gains you get from that start to diminish. The fitness gains you gain from running that far start to diminish, and in relation to the damage you do to your body. Does that make sense?
Right.
So any further than 3 hours, you start to it's more damage than it's worth, sort of thing. I mean, obviously, with the guys that are doing 22 hours, they've got to do a bit of practice past like 5 or 6.
I'm sure that rule applies for anything over an hour as well. It must be like a super sweet spot, you know, like extra ripe.
Yeah, probably.
Anything over an hour. Yeah.
Well, Ben Node used to always like tell me, like, to make any like really endurance benefits on your runs, you've got to do 70 minutes. The 70 minute barrier was the one he said that's when it starts kicking in the real progression. So that, yeah, maybe it's 70 minutes is our sweet spot. But obviously, Damien's he's gone out and he was fifth at UTMB. So UTMB is like one of the top ultra races in the world, probably is the number one. Everyone wants to do the UTMB, and he was fifth place in the world, which is amazing, really. And he talks a bit about his training and what he's been doing in the last couple of years. And we're going to go and listen to Damien now. Here he is. On this week's show, we are speaking to recent fifth placer at the UTMB out in Chamonix, Damien Hall. How are you doing?
Hello, thanks for having me on. I'm doing quite well, although I must say, what day is it? Wednesday. The race finished Saturday. So this is the fourth day since the race. Yeah. It's the first day the adrenaline's really worn off.
Oh, really?
And when I got up this morning, I really did feel like a truck had run over me and then reversed back over me again. But no, it's all good. It's all good. I'm pretty good, really.
Great. And have you come down from that experience? Is it sunk in that you came fifth in one of the biggest trail races in the world?
I don't know. I think it's slowly sinking in. But in terms of have I come down from it, yeah, I feel like physically I've had that that adrenaline's left me. I think it will take a while to sink in, because really it's been a 4-year project. I suppose when I first did the race, I didn't think I'm going to keep doing it for another 4 years. I just each year I've thought I've got to go back and do it one more time to sort of do it justice. So I do feel like that's the end of 4 years of work, although work seems the wrong word for it, but a 4-year project, I suppose. But no, I feel incredibly, you get so much goodwill both out in Chamonix. The finish every year has been better. You know, the crowds are just so generous. So many people I reckon, you know, didn't necessarily know, but sort of recognize the faces, especially other, you know, some really good runners. We're out to greet me. Even people like Hayden Hawks were around and about, and good friends like Nathan Montague had made the effort to come along to the finish, which was wonderful. And then online, you get so much goodwill as well. I'm still trying to catch up with messages on my phone. You couldn't be happier, really.
Fantastic. And what was it like then, sort of crossing the line with all this atmosphere in Chamonix? Was it? Can you remember that moment of coming down the finishing straight?
Yeah, I wanted to milk that. I didn't want that to end. And you do, I get a bit, I fall into the trap halfway into the race when it starts to get more difficult. I do fall into the trap of starting to fantasize about the finish line and thinking how good that'll be when I haven't done the work yet, you know. Yeah. It's a little, you know, there's still so much of the race to go, but once it starts looking favorable for me, I sometimes, you know, you've gone without sleep and stuff and you get into a bit of a strange mindset, and I start to fantasize about the finish line and how good it'll be, and then usually something will happen that will kick me out of that, you know, some something will remind me there's a lot to do and there's a lot of good runners around me. But when I did get the finish line, it was better than I imagined. I, you know, so lucky to have Nikki Spinks crewing for me, and she joined me for the final run in, although I nearly sort of bumped into her at one point. And you just, yeah, I just wanted to high five everyone I could. And I'd actually fallen over on the final descent, cut my hand up. I think I'd relaxed too much. I'd tripped, cut my hand up, and then realized, I thought, actually, I can't high five any children with blood on my hands, because that could be an infection there. That could be genuinely, you know, a problem. So I stopped in a river and washed my hand. But then someone tweeted that their children had complained that my hands were sweaty when I high fived them. so you can't win sometimes. But no, I was high fiving everyone I could, because I thought, it may never get as good as this again. You know, I may never run there again. This might just be the best moment of my running life. I've got to make sure I remember it, I suppose.
Exactly. And what stage did you know that you were firmly in the top 10 or even firmly in fifth? Was there a point when you thought, actually, now I've got this, I can kind of relax a little and I know where I am?
Well, I probably started thinking that a little sooner than I should have. Yeah. But to go back a bit, I suppose, I try not to know my number, my placing too early in the race, because I think it can start affecting how fast you go. Yeah. And that can often be counterproductive. I think it's better to, for the first half of the race, just to try and concentrate on going at a good, sustainable, efficient pace. Right. And then around halfway, I'll try and learn my rough placing. And then I do love the chase between between people. I get more excited by that than racing sort of to a time.
Yeah.
So I do love trying to catch the next person. So around halfway, I knew I was about 12th. I think 13th coming to Cormayo, which is the main checkpoint just before halfway.
Yeah.
And I knew leaving there that I was maybe as good as 11th, but around 12th. And that was absolutely what I wanted. And then I passed three people in the next section. So yeah. I thought, this is going as well as I could possibly expect. But I remember that last year I got into 10th and I got into a bit of a funk and I basically threw it away. So I was coming down. So as it got light, I knew I was about, I think at La Foley, about maybe seven in the morning, when I've just moved into Switzerland. I knew I was about, yeah, that's it. I knew I was possibly seventh. And when I came into the checkpoint, someone told me, you'll be sixth soon because Tim Tollefsen ahead of you is going to drop. He's got an injury. Actually, he didn't drop for quite a few more hours, but I knew then I was sixth or seventh. And that was, you know, beyond my wildest dreams, really. I was 12th the year before. I was trying to crack the top 10. Really, I thought the best I could do was 10th, 9th, possibly 8th. So to be 7th was like, oh gosh. It's quite a sort of heady, giddy feeling. And you've got to really control yourself not to get carried away. But then what was happening is there were still a couple of guys ahead of me who were having trouble. Zach Miller being one of them. And he finally dropped out. But someone did catch me up. I was toing and froing with Scott Hawker quite a bit from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Who's a great guy who I've run with a bit. And we'd to and fro. And we'd help each other. We were being friendly. We both desperately wanted that top 10, so I didn't at the time mind if I was sixth or fifth.
Yeah.
But it was getting in, and then I got up to fifth, and then I was in fifth quite a long time. And the longer you're in a position, the more attached you get to it. So emotionally, so the very last, just before the very last descent down into Chamonix, I thought I was still fifth.
Yeah.
And I was getting some feedback along the trail. People who were out there supporting and watching said I had a 20-minute gap on the guy behind me, who I assumed was Scott Hawker.
Yeah.
So I thought, 20 minutes, that's quite, you know, that's pretty solid. Like, as long as I just don't do anything stupid. But on the last bit of climb, I looked back, had a really good look back to think, can I relax now? Is there no one on my tail? And I couldn't see anyone.
Yeah.
Turns out, actually, there was someone who could see me, who wasn't Scott Hawker, but the guy behind him had overtaken Scott Hawker and was closing really, really well. Now, on that final descent, so I ran it pretty well, but not racing, you know. I ran it pretty well, and some people, some locals, I don't know who they were, three guys just joined me for the run-in, just, I don't know, wanted to be a part of it or something, which was lovely.
Yeah.
And so once I picked myself up from my bloodied hand, we ran down, and it was lovely, and I got to Chamonix, and there were so many people. And then some of my Nikki Spinks joined me, and she said, I didn't want to tell you this at first, after we'd run together for a little bit, but there might be a guy 1 minute behind you.
Whoa.
And I totally switched off. I thought it was in the bag. Yeah. I was quite relaxed. So it was like, oh. So I did speed up a little bit, but it wasn't that easy to speed up once you've your body's just relaxed.
Yeah.
There was only half a kilometer to go, I think, by the time I'd learned that. And luckily, there was another Innovate guy around, and he was able to sort of look behind us at the best possible place and shouted back that he thought we were safe, so I could relax relax in that final bit. But it was a little reminder not never to relax. And I think the guy came in about 3 minutes behind me in the end, so pretty close.
So
I think, yeah, ultimately I would have taken sixth too happily, but if you lose it right at the end, that would have been quite upsetting. But it was just a reminder that you're always racing till you get to that finish line, and it's you shouldn't relax too much.
And what do you, when you said sort of the first half particularly trying to run as smoothly and efficiently as you possibly can, what do you think of, what's going through your mind at that stage? How do you keep focused on what you're doing? Because it's a bloody long time to be concentrating for. How do you do it? What do you think about?
Well, I guess I try and just think about enjoying it, because I know that's going to relax me. So I don't worry too much when the super speedy guys go off ahead. Think more about, am I eating enough? And luckily I love eating. So, and I think one of the two key things in a longer ultra are your pacing and your fueling. So, you know, you keep an eye on your pacing and you keep shoving the fuel in. And there are lots of different ways to do that, but and you try and, you know, the crowds there are huge, so you try and enjoy that, I think, and high five people and try and say thanks and try and smile back at people. So just, I think you just need to relax by enjoying it, and you know, the views are wonderful. And then we did get a bit of rain, but I don't mind that. That's, I train in the rain, you know, in the Brecon Beacons, so that suits me. I'd much prefer that than the heat. And then when it gets dark, I actually love the night section. You know, it's usually a lot quieter. You're really up in the mountains then. And we had a beautiful evening, pretty cold. It probably got to about about zero. But we had quite a clear sky at times. You know, the stars, a big moon, snow on the mountains. Absolutely beautiful. So there's no reason really to be, you know, if you've trained well, you shouldn't be suffering at that point. You should be just enjoying it and relaxing and, you know, not too lazy, trying to keep yourself efficient and honest, but just enjoying it. And then it was probably when my plan was always from Courmayeur, I've got to start, you know, start racing, start being a bit serious. But on the way down to Courmayeur, and here's a phrase I won't be able to say very often. I passed Jim Wormsley, which gave me quite a surprise and was my first sort of hint that, hold on, there might be some drama going on up ahead of me. You know, this might be quite a dramatic race, but try to stay focused on myself and not get carried away, I suppose.
And what happens, obviously, in that period of time, you have some bad and sort of dark patches. What goes through your mind then? How do you regain focus and stop yourself sort of descending into a bit of a hole you can't get out of?
I guess firstly, in my experience, any kind of slump or down spell, the first thing is to check is your nutrition, you know, your fueling and hydration. Are you on top of that? Because so often, and my number one rule is if I have any negative thought, even if it's, oh, I'm not enjoying this, oh, another climb, eat something. Because quite often it's a lack of fueling. You know, you're just running out of a bit of fuel. And, you know, we all get a bit less positive when we're short of cake.
And we're hungry.
yeah, exactly. So that's what I usually do. And But I did have a bit of a slump after a couple of hours, and I think that was because I didn't start too fast, but I allowed myself to be a little bit more ambitious, sort of very carefully ambitious, calculated ambition early on. And when it got a bit too testing for me, I backed off. But not long after that, it felt a little bit uncomfortable. So I just made sure I was eating and drinking and just eased back a bit. And reminded myself I'd be racing for 22, 23 hours, and this was only 2 or 3 hours in. Another tactic, I mean, later in the race, I love sticking my iPod in. I know people say you're in this beautiful scenery, you shouldn't need to, you know, put sort of Tina Turner in your ears. But to me, I'm racing it. I want to do as best as I possibly can. Sometimes I need a distraction from discomforts, distracting my thoughts from, you know, thinking less positive things. So music's quite a good one. And then ultimately, this didn't happen this year, but you know, when it gets really tough, I've got a couple of friends, for example, who I think of who would love to be doing the race or have, you know, had tough times in their lives. And you kind of think how lucky you are to be doing this race. And, you know, remind yourself, you know, we've paid for all the suffering. You've got to make the most of it. And, well, you know, it's a bit cheesy, but I want my kids aren't the least bit interested or impressed by any of this
right now.
We'll see. But that, I suppose that's what, hopefully in a few years or maybe once I'm gone, they'll go, I was quite impressed with what Dad did that time. So I that really inspires me to, you know, hopefully give them some sort of example.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are all sorts of obvious metaphors, aren't there, with ultra running, with life and, you know, working hard and persevering and, you know, the your reward in the end and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things I use.
Excellent. And why do you think that this year was the year? What did you do differently in maybe your training or your tactics to get this result?
Well, I did essentially train. So I was coached for the last 2 years by Ian Sharman, who's a very good coach based in America, but a British ultra runner who's you know, got a lot of pedigree at 100 miles. This year I coached myself, and I did allow myself a sort of calculated risk of a little bit more mileage. So I did do some weeks that were 100 miles or just over, but not lots. But I had a consistent block, several consistent blocks of high mileage. I also did track sessions for the first time, which, because I did look at my, at the end of last year, I analyzed what I'd done, and I thought the one thing I'd never really worked on is speed. I'm not very fast.
Yeah.
So I went to Team Bath Athletics Club, and there's a wonderful guy out there, Paul King, who's a coach who's, you know, been beasting me. I've probably only gone 8 times this year or something, especially earlier in the year. But, and that was a whole new way of running for me.
Yeah.
I'd never done that before. And it's both, you know, horrendous, but very satisfying afterwards and gives clear benefits. And there's a whole debate about whether how useful that is for ultra running. But to me, it was as simple as that's an area I haven't worked on before. Let's work on that.
Yeah.
And then as always, so yeah, a bit more volume overall as well. And as always, I think the UTMB, you've got to concentrate on what the Americans call vert, which is thinking of your week, not necessarily as how many miles you get in, but how much vertical gain you'll get in.
Right.
So I did a block the 6 weeks beforehand. I mean, this is all on my Strava, but the 6 weeks beforehand, I tried really hard to get a minimum of 20,000 foot of climb each week.
Yeah.
Which I think 1 week was 18 and one was 19. But other than that, every week was at least 20. But two of them were 35.
But Bath's fairly, I mean, it's lumpy a bit, but it's not that much. Where were you doing that?
So I have to go out to the Brecon Beacons.
Right.
It's a 3 hour in good traffic. It's a 3 hour round trip in the car.
Yeah.
I'm not proud of the carbon footprint that adds.
No.
But I suppose the time away from kids, I'll get up at 4 or 5 AM for that. I won't see my kids that morning and I'll be back at sort of 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So another sacrifice, was really I sacrificed my work a bit, you know, in sort of July and August, to get the training in, assuming hopefully that it would be worthwhile.
Yeah.
So I do that in when I'm training well, I'll do that once a week. When I was training for UTMB, I was doing that twice a week.
Yeah.
I also went with Jim Mann and Joe Meek and Beth Pascal, who all had pretty good races out there. We all went and recce'd the course together over 3 days.
Oh, great.
Which is obviously the ultimate way to condition your legs.
Yeah.
Mm. Which was, I think, really key, actually. And we all had a Joe probably would feel she didn't have a great race, but she still was very strong in finishing when she had some issues. But the other two, I think, were pretty happy, especially Beth, the fourth woman. And they're all stunning athletes anyway, people I've looked up to for years. But I think those were the key things. But I do, I mean, I try and, you know, I'm not a professional athlete, but I try and think of myself in as professional terms as possible, in terms of getting quality sleep, eating quality food. I didn't drink for 3 months. Well, I didn't drink alcohol for 3 months. I do strength work. I do stretching. I do foam rolling nearly every day. I go and see a physio regularly.
Yeah.
So those are all, So I try and think almost all day, how am I trained? I mean, I work with Shane Benzie, who's a technique coach, his company called Running Reborn, who are excellent. And he even advises, you know, I sit at my desk quite a lot to work. He says, make sure you're thinking about your posture when you're sitting at your desk, because if you've got bad posture there, or just when you stand around in the kitchen waiting for the kettle to boil, if you've got bad posture, then when you try and run, you're still the same person with that same posture, so you won't necessarily have good posture, you won't snap into it. So I try and think of, when I'm sitting there at the desk, I'm trying to have good posture too. Yeah, you don't get it right all the time, but all day I'm training. That's how I try, what I try and tell myself. So, you know, everything I do in that day is going to affect how I run.
Wow.
So kind of, I don't know if you call that holistic or not, but it's a sort of, that's how I'm trying to approach it.
They said there's marginal gains, and that's the buzz phrase, or was the buzz phrase when Sky was in vogue. But I think
I do think of it like that now, because the other thing that motivates me is my age. So I'm 42, and I think in ultra running you maybe have a bit more longevity, but I'm fully aware that at some point I'll probably drop off the cliff, and I will have peaked. So every race, why I said I enjoyed the finish at Chamonix so much and probably milked it, more than most people might. It might be my best ever performance. And from here, I might be on a downward spiral. So, I'm trying to make the most of it while I can.
Yeah. Going back to the beginning of it, what made you, how did you fall into ultra? What started that journey to Chamonix?
Well, so I wasn't really, I enjoyed cross country at school, but I much preferred football, and I played football for 20 odd years. Always thought running was a little bit boring, when you could run with a ball instead. I'd run to get fit for football. Then I did a half marathon in Bath in 2011 and just absolutely fell in love with it straight away. Next year I did my first marathon, and I did that dressed as a toilet. I was raising money for WaterAid, and I thought, people were shouting, you look a bit flushed, mate. It was kind of funny for the first 10 miles, but definitely not towards the end when you really, really do need the toilet and people are sort of laughing at you.
Yeah.
But I love that so much. I'm a journalist, and I pestered a magazine editor to write a story about it. And he finally gave in and said, right, I want you to do me a running story, but I'm going to send you on your first ultra marathon. So this is 2012, and I was like, oh cripes, what's an ultra marathon? So I remember looking it up and going, oh gosh, sounds a bit loony. But I did it, and on minimal training, laughable training now, and it's absolute agony, but I absolutely loved it. And it was a totally different feeling to the end of my first marathon, which was a bit kind of love hate. And the end of the first ultra marathon was, I was just in love with the camaraderie, the scenery, getting to eat all that cake, the sense of achievement. I straight away thought, I'm doing more of this.
Yeah.
So next year I was doing my first 100K, then my first 100 miler. Then I was soon doing the spine race. I think it was only my fifth ultra marathon. But the one thing I've neglected to mention is that I was really into long distance hiking. So I used to love going and walk Pennine Way, walk the coast to coast, multi-day walks. And it's actually very similar to ultra marathon running, because you're going up and down hills, you're carrying a pack, you're having to eat on the go, you're being self-reliant, you're going through the night maybe. So much of that is so similar. I already had a lot of the skills without really knowing it.
Yeah.
So I was well and truly stuck into it. And I stopped playing football almost instantly and thought, this is the thing for me.
Yeah.
And then I think because I embraced it so passionately, I began to get some semi-competitive results, and that just made me want it more and more. So I'd get coaching, and I've just been obsessed with it ever since. So I'm only 5 or 6 years into it, but my bookshelf has totally changed. It's just all running books now instead of football books.
And do you think it's something about you physically, or something about mentally that has meant you thrived at ultra running? Is there something you think, a skill you had or possessed that meant you kind of got addicted, or you shone at the sport?
I think, it's fascinating, isn't it? What sort of people are attracted to the sport. And I guess I can see now that I do have a little bit of an obsessional quality, which I think I had with football before and maybe one or two other things. when I find a bit of food stuff that I like, I have it every day for 6 months. So, moment it's balsamic vinegar.
Right.
I've had I have to have balsamic vinegar. I often have it on my breakfast and my lunch at the moment.
Really? Wow.
Nut butter is the biggest sort of cliche in ultra running, isn't it? But I'm still in a nut butter obsession. And I'm similar with music. I don't know if this makes my personality a bit alarming or borderline on the spectrum, but with music, when I find a song I love, I need to listen to it every single day, several times a day. And I think those sorts of attitudes lend themselves to ultra running. But my wife pointed out that my idea of fun isn't most people's idea of fun, and so I used to drag her on some of my long distance walks, and funnily enough she doesn't seem to miss them now that I prefer to run those distances. So she thinks I enjoy the suffering side of it. It's difficult to know, but I do enjoy a bit of suffering, but I love being out in lumpy places and seeing the scenery and pushing myself physically. I really enjoy that too. yeah, I mean, there's lots to enjoy in the sport, as I'm sure you're finding yourself.
Yeah, and what's next after, you know, you've achieved this fantastic achievement? It's been 4 years almost in the making. Where do you think you want to go from this point?
I do really love the sort of 100-mile distance. Mm. So I would like to, I think it's time to, yeah, move on from UTMB for now. I'd love to do one of the bigger 100-mile races in America, especially the Western States 100 or the or Hard Rock. But they're both very difficult to get into because in America they have different regulations, I think, for the kind of use of the land, the national parks. So the start lines are a lot smaller. But I'd love to, I'm going to look into my project for the next few months will be to look into, you know, whether I can get a place at Western States next year. Yeah. So they would be my two sort of at the top of my wish list. And I, yeah, there's something special about the 100-mile distance. Just the emotions you go through and the journey. And I love Anne Trazin's quote that you when you run 100 miles you live a year in one day, and it's certainly each of my 100 seem to have aged me by an extra year anyway. That's the plan at the moment.
Yeah, so no backing off in terms of your sort of intensity and in the volume of your training?
Well, I'm definitely having a couple of months off now. This is time for sort of family, and you know, because I've asked a lot of my wife and my family over the last few months, and if I carried on training hard now, I'd probably get into an unhealthy state. I did my first race in February, so I've been training all hard for quite a long spell now. Yeah. So 2 months, I say off, I'm still going to run, but just 3 or 4 times a week, just whenever I fancy it, probably nothing intense, nothing long,
yeah.
Just fun runs. And then I'll, there's a possible project in December, a sort of winter adventure that me and a couple of friends are talking about, which I better keep to myself for now, but that might be sort of kick-starting the next year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to some downtime really of, you know, yeah. You know, having a bit of a drink and eating less healthily and just relaxing.
and most of our listeners are probably sort of marathon, half marathon runners. For those of our listeners, what would you say, would your tips be to start off an ultra running? Is there an event or a distance you'd recommend trying for them?
I've done a couple of, especially early on, I did a couple of trail marathons, actually, and I think they're an excellent sort of bridging event because you have to throw away your watch, effectively, because, you know, you're not going to get a PB.
Yeah.
And therefore you just, I think, relax your pace a bit and forget about what your pace is, which is almost irrelevant in most ultra marathons. And so your marathon, if someone's can run a 3 hour on the road, a trail marathon might be 4.5 to 5 hours for them.
Yeah.
So that's a nice little taste of kind of trail running, you know, a decent distance. And then, I mean, the logical thing would be to, if they have a taste for that, would be to be trying a shorter ultra marathon from there, you know, a 30 or 40 mile thing and build up gradually. Mm. At the same time, like that's the sort of textbook way to do it. But at the same time, you know, I did the Spine Race, which is 268 miles as my fifth ultramarathon, and my third ultramarathon was 100 miles. So there's no reason why people can't jump up sooner if they have, you know, so much of it is mental sort of fortitude. And there's a cliche that you, in 100 miles anyway, you run the first 50 miles in your legs and the second 50 miles in your head, right. Because, you know, your legs aren't working so well anymore and it's just how much you want it, really.
Yeah.
So I would maybe tell them to, you know, if someone's used to the roads, I would experiment off-road,
yeah.
And just see if they like. And one of the secrets in our sport, I don't know if it sounds, the 100 miles in the mountains sounds, I guess, pretty ridiculous to some people. But really, we do hike quite a bit of that. When it gets really steep, there's almost no point. In fact, it's counterproductive to try and run right up a really steep mountain.
Yeah.
It might be a 1,000-meter climb, you know. If you run that, you're really going to put your calves through something, and you're going to be exhausted at the top. Your heart rate's going to be soaring.
Yeah.
But there's a skill to hiking. It's not like a Sunday ramble with your thermos and your map. But you know, there's nothing stopping you walking for a bit in an ultra marathon or even a trail marathon. Even if you just feel a bit exhausted at the end, or you've got some blisters, or whatever it is, no one's going to mock you for doing that, and it's totally fine. So I can see how people run a road marathon and think they couldn't run any further, but you almost don't quite run, you know, you don't necessarily run 26 miles consecutively in an ultra marathon.
Right.
In fact, you rarely do in the ones I do.
Yeah.
So you get a break, your body gets a break, uses different muscles. So when it comes to a flat bit again, you feel like, oh, a flat bit, that's a change of a different sensation. So it is, I don't want to say ultra marathons are easy, but they're easier than people think, I think.
Right, okay.
They're easier than they sound.
Yeah.
And you get to shove in a lot of cake as well. So, you know, that's one of the main reasons.
That's a highlight. And in terms of training, yes, as well, do you think, obviously you didn't spend too long in kind of in the marathon phase, but do you think there's, what do you think is the key to training for ultras for us? Is it sort of big long runs? Should we be getting out doing 5 or 6 hours? Or how do you structure your training to get the most out of it?
I do think the long run is the most important aspect. But incidentally, I did run a marathon. I ran the Manchester Marathon earlier this year and got a PB. Yeah. That was part of my sort of game plan,
right,
to just try and improve my overall speed. You know, so and I would say if someone's just run a good marathon, then they're actually in a really good, they've done a lot of the training already. I would just, you know, maybe in the average person's marathon training, they might do their long runs. I'm just guessing they might do an 18 miler, then a 20, then maybe a 22 or something.
Yeah.
Just for example, I think to do an ultra marathon, you'd maybe need another month where you do a couple more 20 mile runs. Really, I think just having the long run fairly regular and having a few of them, you know, getting used to running 20 miles fairly regularly, doesn't have to be every week, gets you in a really good. That's in a really good position to be able to run an ultra, and you don't have to be any fitter than for a marathon, really.
Right.
I've got friends who've done them on, you know, sort of 30 to 40 miles a week, have completed ridiculous length ultra marathons because I don't know, but because they can hike bits, that, you know, it's an eating contest, some people say. and so I think it's just a lot of it's the mental accepting that it might be possible.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people can make the step up, and, you know, I've certainly haven't looked back, and I don't meet many people who do an ultra marathon and say it's not for them, although it sounds like it.
Yeah.
You know, it should be that way.
Fantastic. And I've got three questions, one of which I'm hoping is quite a long discussion, which I asked to all of our interviewees. The first one is, if you could be anywhere running now, where would that be?
Oh, well, part of my head would love to still be in Chamonix running up and down the finish straight of UTMB, high-fiving people. I'd like to be doing that forever.
On a continuous loop. Yeah.
Yeah. But I, you know, but that's not going to happen. I'm already missing the Brecon Beacons, to be honest, where I do a lot of my training.
Yeah.
It's only been 2 weeks since I've been away, but I must credit my friend Dan Doherty, who's shown me some. He lives out there, and he's an incredible ultra runner, and he's shown me some good routes out there, and I've got into the habit of, yeah, as I say, before UTMB, going there twice a week. So it's become such a part of my, you know, my week that I do really miss it. And I just love, you know, they're not big mountains. They're small by Britain's standards, but they're just really special, really unique shapes and colors. And I've seen them in so many different weathers, and there's so much character to them. And I love the ponies out there, and, you know, they're just so tough. When you think you're being tough, and then you go around the corner and see these ponies, you know, defying the hail and the sleet, and I just love it out there. I'd like to go back there soon, but maybe not tomorrow or today.
No, rest up. Second question is, can you recommend us something? So that could be anything from a book, film, magazine, TV show, anything you'd like to recommend.
Oh gosh.
There is a film with about you coming out shortly, isn't there? That it's called The Underdog. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, I was just debating whether to do the really blatant horribly promotional thing or to go a bit left field. But my very good friends, Matt and Ellie Green from Summit Fever Media, they were out in Chamonix with me and have been with me a lot of the year making a film about me trying to crack the top 10 at UTMB. They very kindly, and they're incredibly hardworking. They were getting up at 3 a.m. during the race to hike 2 hours up a mountain to, you know, get a tiny bit of footage of me running past in the mist. They very kindly, before the race, when I was getting a little bit, I did feel more pressure this year, you know, entirely my own fault. But and I did say to them, look, if I don't have a good race, will you still have a film out of it? And they said, oh, yeah, no problem. And then afterwards they were like, phew. And I was like, were you lying then? And they said, yeah, yeah. Much better. Obviously, you know, I had a good outcome for them. But, it put some pressure on. But they've been filming me at my worst. I actually really, I'm dreading seeing the film because, you know, I don't know how easy I'm making it all sound. But during the race, I bet I was pulling some right old faces and probably whinging away about how miserable it all was. Yeah. When, you know, and so they have got a film called Underdog, which will be out. I think they're hoping to debut it this autumn at film festivals. And at some point, you know, Innovate, my sponsors are involved in it. There'll be some sort of, I'm sure next year it'll be, I may imagine next year it'll be more widely available, but we're aiming for film festivals at the moment. But that's kind of you to let me mention that.
No trouble. And our final question is, what's, in your opinion, the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Wow.
It's a
what a question. Well, I guess I'm always incredibly inspired by these people who sort of run around the world, you know, take 2 years off or whatever the average time is and just run around the world. And they often have to do it like you need to carry so much stuff, but they often have like a sort of cart, don't they, with a wheeled cart to carry all their stuff because they're camping. And I'm impressed with some of these guys. And annoyingly, none of the names are going to come to my head. Oh, there's that guy. What's that guy, Jamie, I think it is, running across America at the moment?
Yeah.
Who ran across Canada last year. I'm really sorry, Jamie, I've forgotten your...
It's not Jamie Forrest, is it? I'm definitely going to put a link to it on the...
Do you know what? There's a few, I think. There's a few. I'm really impressed by those guys, I suppose. But in terms of the greatest endurance performances, who's that Greek-Australian? I'm going to say his name wrong. Yanis Kouros, I think it is. He's got like most of the world records for kind of... 6 day racing. I think he had the 100-mile record for a while in the sort of 60s and 70s. I think he was setting all these records and just holds a ridiculous amount of them. He's very incredible. So incredible I can't say his name, but the guy who's around at the moment in Britain who inspires me the most is Dan Lawson, who just tried to set a record on the joggle, the John O'Groats Land's End. So he was running, I think he had to run 90 miles a day for about a week, 8 or 9 days, I think, to just break the record. And he just came up short, but he was running, you know, just so phenomenally well. And it really breaks the body, really. I once ran the Southwest Coast Path in a sort of continuous effort. And I was broken for, you know, I was fatigued for the rest of the year.
Really?
So I've got, and what he was doing was much more impressive than what I did. And to run on road as well, to me that's much more painful and mad. He's the guy that inspires me personally the most at the moment.
Fantastic. Well, great stuff. Well, I'll leave you to the rest of your afternoon. Hopefully you can get some more recovery and perhaps go and eat some more nut butter or whatever else you've got the addiction with at the moment. But congratulations on a fantastic race, and fingers crossed you can get yourself patched up and be back on the racing scene soon.
Well, thank you ever so much for having me on. I hope I wasn't too boring or rambling. A pleasure to be on. And let me know if you need anything else from me. Thanks again.
Wicked. So nice chatting to Damien there. Check out the film coming out soon. Should be an interesting watch, and really nice to talk to someone who's so enthusiastic about their running and their performances. And that was great. Great chat. So when are you going to do your first ultra, Jermaine?
I'll be queued up next to you. Yeah, Sean. Yes. Queued up next to you. I'll be your helper.
Yeah. Okay. You could do my crew in for me.
I've already got my qualification for water boy in the London Marathon, Guatemala. So I'm already certified.
Okay. Perfect. So you'll crew me around next year, and I'll give it a go. UTMB. Let's do it. Get up in the mountains. Have you ever been up in the mountains? You do skiing and stuff, don't you? Yeah. You're a big skiing fan.
Snowboarding. Yeah.
So you love that.
Mountain running is hard, but I can get up there. I can get up there with a parachute.
I didn't think they let people from Jamaica up in their mountains.
Please, black people have never seen snow. It's like black people, you see them swimming, they just sink. You know what I'm saying?
So tell what
reviews have we got? Go on. We need to fill our crack addiction.
Okay.
Reviews.
We got one. Guess how many stars he's given us? He's given us 5.
Hopefully. Yeah, that's my boy.
Always 5 out of 5. And this man is called Elliot Purple. He's definitely a man, because Elliot's a boy. Is Elliot? Yeah, that's a boy's name. I'm saying that's definitely.
It doesn't matter.
We like girls and boys to give us reviews. So here we go. He said, I've tried loads of running podcasts, only to find them a bit dry. We hear you, brother. These guys keep it loose and loads of interesting interviews. Great work, gents. Keep them coming. Yes, Elliot, we will keep them coming. Thanks for your review.
I love that. forget those other dry toast podcasts.
There's some good ones out there. And the guy from is it Cloud259? His name's Greg Lemos. Greg Lemos Stein. He's also doing a Nate Jenkins training plan. So big up to Cloud259. But all the others, we've got beef with you. We're taking you down.
It's caramel vanilla coming for them. It's caramel vanilla swap, yeah.
No, we're nice. We're a family show. We keep it real. Anyway.
A family show. What are you talking about?
Anyway, I'm off to have my dinner. You're off to cook your dinner.
I am.
What's on the plate tonight?
So, it's all good. I'm doing fish and chips.
Beautiful.
Now I'm special, but keeping it English.
Yeah, nice. Well, we're going Italian. We're having Putin. Is it pasta Putin?
We said Putin then.
We're having Vladimir Putin's coming round, and we're having Putinesca, which I think translates as whore's pasta. So we're going for a whore's pasta with Putin. We should be lovely.
Lovely. Well, what else? Do we need to mention anything else?
Oh, we do need to mention the live show. Keep looking out for that. Where there should be plenty of stuff on our social media accounts by that 26th of September. There's a Facebook event for you to get signed up on, and we will be publicising that on all our channels. But those of you who have emailed and registered, we'll give you first dibs, get you signed up for that, and we'll see you on the 26th of September down in London. Carry on.
I was going to say, last one. What happened to those t-shirts?
T-shirts, mate, we've changed brand. I'm not going to mention the brand we went with, because they really messed up. I don't want to talk ill of people, but he didn't do it. Things happened. I don't know what happened.
So that's what happens when you get stuff from Taiwan.
That's what happens when he was English, but anyway, we'll move on. But we are going to get a new producer, and I think they're going to be ready by the live show. So you could even buy some at the live show. So we'll get them sorted out. And
Sean will be wearing them.
I'll be wearing them. I'll be eating my horse pasta in my new white t-shirts. So yeah, they'll be covered in tomato sauce. But anyway, they'll be there to buy it, or there'll be options on the internet to get those. So yeah, get involved. Nice one. Well, have a good night, Jermaine. We'll speak soon.
Cool. Same.
See you later.
See you later.
Bye.